This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss Europe's unprecedented early summer heat wave. According to the WHO, more than 1,300 excess deaths may be linked to extreme temperatures since June 21st. New heat records were set again yesterday in Germany, Poland, the Czech Republic, and other parts of Europe as scorching temperatures continue to grip the continent. On Thursday, UN Climate Change Executive Secretary Simon Steele said, quote, "Europe's savage heat wave has the fingerprints of the climate crisis all over it. It's the latest price to pay for fossil fuel pollution baking our planet," end quote. So how are communities coping? Which populations are most vulnerable? And what does this tell us about the growing cost of the climate crisis? Beth Gardner is a journalist and author of two books, Plastic Ink, The Secret History and Shocking Future of Big Oil's Biggest Bet, and Choked, Life and Breath in the Age of Air Pollution. Beth Gardner's work has appeared in many publications, including the New York Times and The Atlantic. Her latest piece in The Atlantic is called Europe's Come to AC Moment. The heat is changing the continent's interest in cooling technologies of all kinds. Hi, Beth. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi, I'm so pleased to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. In this piece, you write that you've lived in London for 25 years and you do not recall ever hearing anyone talk about buying a home air conditioner. So first off, how are you doing? How are you and your family and friends coping with the heat?
Well, it's been pretty sweaty, but it has cooled down actually yesterday and today. So it is much more comfortable now. And this heat dome weather pattern is moving east. So, you know, today I think the highest temperatures have been in places like Poland and Hungary, and Western European countries are cooling down a little bit. But, you know, it's been brutal. And it is the second, actually, major heat wave already of this summer. I started work on this article last month because there was a terrible, really unprecedented heat wave in May when the temperature in London hit 95 degrees. And the other thing that really prompted me to start thinking about this issue of air conditioning, which is, you know, sort of a way of coping, right, with these really high temperatures that Europe is experiencing so much more regularly now than it ever had before. There's a sort of expert body here, a panel called the British Climate Change Committee. So this is an entity which was created by law, by the British Climate Change Law, to advise the government on both cutting carbon emissions to sort of, you know, mitigate climate change and sort of prepare the country to adapt with climate change. So this British Climate Change Committee issued a big report last month. It was like a couple of days, I think, that it came out before that big May heat wave. And they recommended that the country needs to start deploying air conditioning because, as I'm sure you know, Britain and much of the rest of Europe, really, air conditioning is much less common than it is in the United States. About 20% across Europe of households have air conditioning. That's compared to 90% in the United States. And actually, when you realize that the rates are much higher in Southern European countries like Spain, Italy, Greece, you realize that in the UK, actually, even a few years ago, it was only 5% of households had air conditioning. Also, schools, hospitals, long-term care facilities, prisons, very, very rare to see air conditioning in those settings. And that was what this Climate Change Committee report flagged. And they said that the UK is not built for the climate that exists today. The climate that this country is built for is long gone, actually. And they said that heat, along with drought and floods, poses a major change to the British way of life. They recommended not only air conditioning, other less energy-hungry cooling measures as well, like better ventilation and more shading, awnings, external shutters on the outsides of houses and other buildings. But they did say we are going to need air conditioning. And having lived in the UK for 25 years, that really felt like a big moment to me, a real watershed for this expert body of climate change experts to be making this official recommendation to the British government. Air conditioning is just not sort of in the cultural DNA in the UK and in a lot of other parts of particularly Northern Europe. You know, really, you could say in large part, that's because they kind of haven't really needed it until pretty recently. But it's sort of seen as this, like, you know, very, very American, kind of somewhat indulgent luxury. And we'll just sort of sweat through, you know, those few really hot days of the summer every year and then kind of forget about it when the temperatures drop back into the 60s or the low 70s, which used to be a normal British summer. So that felt like a real cultural moment to me when that committee made that recommendation. That was what got me started thinking about this. And then by the time I actually finished the article, it was very timely for the second major heat wave of the summer.
And in your piece in The Atlantic, you write that 90% of homes in the United States have air conditioning. I did not know it was so high. In Europe, yeah, about 20% of homes have air conditioning. So did this report also focus on access? Because according to the European Commission, 92 million people in the EU are at risk of poverty. So how are they going to ensure that low-income people also have access,
yeah,
to air conditioning?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a huge issue, and it was raised by all of the sort of thermal comfort, as they're called, experts that I spoke to, you know, academics and scientists who study sort of cooling and how we stay cool. You know, in general, across Europe, Northern Europe, that is, homes are really designed with winter in mind, right? How do you keep warm when it's cold out? Because historically, until recently, the temperatures have not been quite so high in the summers as we are now experiencing. But, you know, when you look at sort of who lives in poor quality housing stock, in buildings with bad insulation, or in sort of really tall, you know, apartment towers that are surrounded by concrete and very little greenery, which we know can kind of moderate the temperatures, of course, you won't be surprised to hear that that is disproportionately low-income people. You know, so this is a threat that is affecting everybody, but air conditioning is expensive. You know, home retrofits where you get better insulation or you put in, you know, shade or whatever, are expensive. And the people who are most vulnerable are definitely on the lower end of the income scale. And that is why that British Climate Change Committee report that I was talking about a minute ago recommended that, you know, some kind of subsidies or public funding support might be necessary for lower income households to get access to air conditioning, cooling. You know, I read a really good article in The Guardian about heat in Paris, in the sort of very poor suburban areas of Paris, these high, you know, very tall apartment towers crammed with people. And the article quoted people who even said that electricity prices are so high, they are afraid to even run a fan for more than an hour or two, let alone air conditioning. So this is going to need a lot of help. And then, you know, you also need to look across public sector buildings like schools, where the temperatures in classrooms have been, you know, 95, even 100 degrees. Mm-hmm. Hospitals are terrible reports, you know, from across Britain and other countries about unbearable temperatures in hospital wards, you know, machinery like MRIs and radiation machines breaking down just as the emergency rooms are overflowing. So it's actually going to require a really big investment by not just, you know, private individuals who might buy an air conditioner for their home or at least more fans, but by governments as well.
Today, we're speaking about Europe's unprecedented heat wave with journalist Beth Gardner, who has lived in London for many years and has experienced this firsthand. Beth, when I first heard about the number of people who have drowned in heat wave related deaths, it was shocking because the numbers were so high. And now, according to the WHO, more than 1,300 deaths may be linked to extreme temperatures. I was just watching a Channel 4 report about how many older people have, yes, gone to the hospital and are losing their lives because of the heat wave.
Yes, exactly. And this speaks to, you know, I guess there's sort of two really important things to think about here, right? Like, climate change is causing, this is not coming out of nowhere. There's always been hot temperatures in the summer, but this heat wave is really on steroids. And there was a group of scientists who did an attribution analysis and said that this heat wave was unprecedented for Europe in terms of the severity, the length, how widespread it has been in so many countries, and that it would have been virtually impossible without climate change. So we need to be thinking about that. You know, what are we doing as a continent, as countries, as a world, to try to get those greenhouse gas emissions down so we can mitigate some of this in the future? But, you know, as you know, climate change is now baked in already. We are living with it. So there's big questions about how we manage it. And a lot of the conversation in Europe has been around air conditioning and cooling. And just like you said, you know, this is a life and death issue. France is already reporting 1,000 deaths from the heat wave. They were one of the worst affected countries, broke multiple records, hottest temperature, hottest day and hottest night ever in France, not just in June, but ever. I think they hit 110 degrees out in the western part of the country. 1,000 deaths already, and it will probably, unfortunately, go up as the toll continues to be counted. Like you said, you know, a lot of drownings as people are seeking relief, going swimming in, you know, rivers, canals, pools, whatever. And the World Health Organization did an analysis not long ago, and they actually found 200,000 deaths in Europe just in the past 4 years from extreme heat. And that is because Europe is not set up for this. It is not built for heat. Homes, you know, public buildings are not designed. You do find air conditioning if you go. I went to the movies over the weekend, and that was like blessed relief from the AC, right? Saw the Steven Spielberg movie. It was fun. Perfect for a hot day. Supermarkets, some offices, you know, but by and large, it is not widespread. And Europe is going to need to reckon with that because this is not going away. Europe is actually the fastest warming continent in the world. We know temperatures are going up everywhere, but Europe is relative to its current climate going up faster than anywhere globally. And they need to, you know, put their foot down and start adapting.
And Beth, unfortunately, we are expecting the same kind of heat in the Midwest and the East Coast in a couple of days. So, you know, this is hitting tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people around the globe. We have just a couple minutes left, Beth, and I wonder, you know what's happening here in the United States with the Trump regime just attacking climate policy across the board. What does it look like in Europe?
Yeah, you know, it's been so interesting to read some of these reports about, you know, climate hushing is a phrase that Senator Sheldon Whitehouse used recently for this sort of reluctance on the part of a lot of politicians, even in the Democratic Party and the media, to talk about climate change. Feels so painful to see that as we are actually watching, you know, unfortunately, the actual climate didn't get that memo. In Europe, you know, the politics obviously are different. You don't see the kinds of attacks on climate science, on climate policy, like your previous guest was talking about, you know, the Trump administration actually paying energy companies to not complete and not operate wind farms that are, you know, almost done being built. The politics are a little bit different in Europe, but I think that as the cost of living has gone up, there has been a resurgence, you know, certainly on the right. In the UK, there's some concern about possibly backing off of targets on net zero. It's been politicized in a way that it had not been previously in this country, where the politics of climate have been a little bit different than in the United States. But I mean, I think one big takeaway from the last few months, even before this heat wave, with the you know, the conflict in Iran and the crisis in the Strait of Hormuz, has been that Europeans are now actually beginning to understand fossil fuels versus renewable clean energy as a security issue, not only a climate issue, as if climate change were not enough motivation, to accelerate the transition off of fossil fuels and onto renewables. You know, people are really have gotten this like absolute object lesson in real time over the last few months for, what is it, the third or fourth time now in the last 5 or 6 years, of how vulnerable you are when you are so dependent on fossil fuels as Europe has been on, you know, Russian gas and those shiploads of oil coming through the Strait of Hormuz from the Middle East. You know, it's an energy security issue now as well.
Beth Gardner is a journalist and author of two books, Plastic Ink and Choked, Life and Breath in the Age of Air Pollution. Beth, thank you so much for your work. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you back.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. And we have an email from Ruby who says, be sure to hydrate the outside. It's a short-term solution. Wet your clothes, your head, and your shirt. It really helps. Thank you for that. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.